Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But, you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Culp, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, May 7th, and here we are for our local COVID-19 information program on KSJE. So welcome, everyone. We're glad you're with us. Thank you for joining us and doing all right? Having
yes,
a day?
You
okay?
Thank you.
Okay, good.
Yes, all right. I never ask.
I never check to see how my co-host is doing.
True. You never
and
check
I thought
in.
Today of all days, I'm gonna ask the question.
I woke up this morning and thought, you know what I'm going to ask today? I don't know how well I'm doing, actually, because I did. My breakfast this morning consisted of a convenience store fruit pie. And I feel like that's got to be
okay.
A warning sign.
Well, maybe not one of your best choices, but yeah. You know.
I feel like that pie's probably been there for like 5 years, and they're like, well, somebody's going to buy the pie.
And here you came in.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Okay. All right. So that happened.
That happened. All right. Well.
So don't feel guilty, listeners. It's quarantine. We make weird dietary decisions.
Yes. There you go. But you got breakfast at least.
I got some breakfast.
One of the most important meals of the day.
That's right.
And I've been told.
I don't know if that counts for gas station fruit pies, but here I am. So
okay.
We're good.
You're functioning.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We have some guests at the top of the show.
Excellent.
So why don't we get to,
yes,
to them?
Yes, let's do it.
Because we appreciate them calling in, and I just hung up on one of them.
Call back.
I'm so sorry.
You know who you are. Call back.
I'm so sorry. Yes. But good morning. You're on KSJE.
Good morning.
Hi there, and who?
Jenny.
This is Chris and Jenny. Yes.
Yes.
Good morning. Good to have you with us. And hold on, let me bring in back our other guest. Good morning to you. I'm sorry I hung up on you, Rebecca. This is Rebecca French.
Sorry, Rebecca.
That's okay.
But thank you both for calling in. And so you both are certified nurse practitioners at San Juan Regional Medical Center. And we wanted to ask you and have you share with us a little bit about a new program the hospital is doing for COVID-19 patients. So let me ask you both to kind of talk a little bit about this new program, what it's all about.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rebecca. Oh, okay. The program is based on a Vanderbilt University Medical Center care model. And we were able to fortunately get in touch with them in order to create a model similar to theirs for San Juan County. And basically what the COVID-19 home to clinic is now offering is basically outpatient services for anyone who has tested positive for COVID-19 or who has COVID-19 like illness. And what we're doing is we're closely monitoring patients out in the community in their own home with telemedicine visits. The visits are basically determined on their risk, and they are grouped into different risk categories. And depending on their risk, will determine whether or not they will be seen by a telemedicine provider every single day, every other day, or by a nurse. So we have a bunch of protocols and stuff that we are following to provide care for these patients. The goal of it is really to simply try to keep patients at home in order for them to self-isolate, but also identify decompensation that can occur in COVID-19 patients. It also helps to try to free up some of the beds in the hospital, so the healthcare providers in the hospital are able to take care of those more severe cases of COVID-19 and also help to preserve PPE.
Great. And so how do you guys check in on folks? Is it like Teladoc or what does that look like?
Yeah. So we have a telemedicine service that we've been using. So that's ideal if patients can pull the telemedicine service up on their smartphones or computers. If not, we've been calling patients and speaking to them over the phone, and so we've been doing a lot of visits like that as well.
What kinds of questions do you guys ask patients?
A lot of the questions we ask are really, it's pretty in-depth based on symptoms that we're finding with COVID-19 patients that are pretty common, as well as just listening to, a lot of it is kind of in tuning to the patient and listening to them to see if they sound short of breath, if they're able to walk, you know, 5 to 10 steps without getting severely short of breath, determining what their symptoms were prior to getting tested when those occurred. So it's a pretty in-depth review of systems, as well as just talking to the patients and getting to know them. And I feel that one thing that is helpful with the program that we have is because we're contacting our high-risk patients almost, we're contacting them every single day by a provider, and then the nurse is also contacting them later on in the afternoon to make sure that they are okay. So we're able to really kind of see if they're starting to deteriorate, just having that consistent communication, and we can help to identify them needing hospitalization early.
Interesting. And so are you also working with folks maybe who have been hospitalized and now have maybe been discharged from the hospital to finish their recovery and isolation at home, or how does that work? Is that also part of the patients that you're talking with?
Yeah, definitely. We are following up with patients who are discharged home with maybe home oxygen, and keeping an eye on them closely as well. We are seeing with this COVID illness, you can get a re-sickening when you're quite a ways into the illness. And so we want to make sure that we can identify those patients early and monitor and manage them appropriately, and then send them back to the hospital if that's what needs to happen at that time.
Yes, and speaking to that point, that's a good segue into just an observation I made. So I know a handful of individuals who've contracted this disease, and one of them did not have to stay in the hospital, has been quarantining at home, but has had a fever for 3 weeks now. Do you see a lot of that?
Yeah, we are starting to see, you know, that unfortunately COVID-19 seems to be extending for a longer period of time. And so what it looks like is that, you know, in the beginning phase, symptoms are not very severe. And so patients are able to isolate at home during that time. But there is what's called a second sickening that's coming along between day 6 to day 10, day 12, where the very severe symptoms can occur. And that is really like the persistent cough, shortness of breath, fever that can be as high as, you know, 103. So very severe symptoms. We are seeing some patients that are also complaining of loss of smell and taste. So we are watching, and that's the time period that we really need to identify. And that's why we are monitoring these patients very closely. So again, during that time frame, if any emergencies do occur, we can coordinate with a hospital as well as EMS to safe transport. Patients are getting through that time phase though at home without needing hospitalization too, but it's super important just for someone to keep close eye on them.
And thank you for that. And maybe you can help us understand too, maybe that these cases don't present the same in every patient. I mean, is that true? It seems like we see a lot of folks who maybe have mild symptoms and they maybe are not as impacted as maybe some other patients, and not necessarily by age either, but all of a sudden they're having a hard time breathing and they're in the hospital and they are maybe almost close to getting on a ventilator or something like that. Is that realistic, or is that not what you're seeing?
No, absolutely. We're seeing a huge variety of symptoms in different patients, anywhere from maybe a mild headache, some fatigue, all the way to full-blown, you know, shortness of breath, respiratory distress. And so it's really, we can look at the risk factors of each patient to kind of predict how closely they need to be monitored, but it is really hard to predict exactly what symptoms are going to manifest in each patient. We're also seeing patients with a lot of GI upset, so nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, things like that. And those symptoms need to be monitored carefully as well because they can lead to dehydration.
Good to know. And we've also been hearing reports about other, maybe even long-term damage for these survivors of COVID-19, that maybe their lungs are a bit compromised, and that is one of the lingering effects of this for the folks who have recovered. Is that something, too, that you are seeing or you're aware of?
I feel that we probably will start to see more of that. Being on an outpatient side, we don't have a lot of that data as of yet.
Okay.
The more patients that we probably will get to monitor discharged from the hospital, we'll probably see that. But I do know that they are concerned about that as well. So I think as the time goes on, we'll have more data regarding that, too. But it is definitely possible, and it will also depend on the severity of their illness.
And I just like to point that out for folks who maybe see, and I see it a lot, unfortunately, on social media, when they compare this to the flu, and I hate saying it even on the air, because it's so different from influenza, and these are some of the reasons why, right? Because of these lingering impacts and the damage it causes to the body for these survivors?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing, you know, a full-blown immune response that we definitely do not see in the flu. And so this is a whole different beast than the flu and needs to be treated with a lot of caution. And we're still finding out a lot about the virus every day. So,
yeah. And I feel that also, it cannot be compared to the flu, unfortunately. COVID-19 has the medical profession like completely upside down right now, in a way where we're trying to have to learn how to manage patients differently than we have been managing patients before with respiratory illnesses. So that's something that we also have to consider. And it's not transmitted the same as the flu either. What we're seeing right now is a lot of asymptomatic spread, and asymptomatic spread is a major mode of transmission for COVID-19. So with COVID-19, patients who don't have any symptoms can be transmitting the virus 2 to 5 days prior to any symptoms present. And so this is a very difficult thing to deal with because, you know, nobody knows that they're sick and they're transmitting the virus, and others are picking it up. And that's why there's a large amount of community spread going on.
Yes, and so, I mean, it's clear that the medical community's understanding of the virus is, like, constantly evolving. Is it possible that the virus itself is evolving really quickly? I think about that just in regards to these new symptoms, like GI symptoms and stuff. Is it becoming more virulent? Or is it just that it's so novel that our understanding just keeps changing by the week?
I think it is evolving, or the term I hear is mutating.
Right, mutating. I mean, does it do that quickly? I mean, I don't know anything. That's why I'm asking the professionals.
Let's find out.
Yeah.
What do you hear?
I certainly think that it can evolve, yeah. And it likely is evolving, but it's just so new that it's hard for us to know what symptoms were present with the original virus and what symptoms are evolving with the virus. And we really don't have enough data, I think, right now to know, you know, what is the new evolved virus at this point.
Yes. And I know that they are keeping a close track on if it is evolving. I was on a listening to the World Health Organization regarding this, and at the time, which was a couple of weeks ago, it didn't show significant mutation. It seemed like it was fairly stable, but again, everything's changing so quickly that we can't really tell you whether or not it's evolving quickly or not.
Understood. But it certainly is something that we, and by we, I mean you, in the medical profession, have never seen before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so different from the way that it spreads and the infection rates and things along that line is what I'm trying to say. And I think I've seen something else about COVID toes.
Wait,
is another symptom
COVID toes. Yes.
COVID toes, right,
okay,
ladies?
Let's ask the nurses.
Back me up.
We're seeing all kinds of new rashes pop up, or rashes that we've seen before, but maybe not associated with COVID in the past, kind of pop up now with COVID, and COVID toes is one of them. So it's kind of these red-looking toes. So that is definitely one of the symptoms that we're seeing in some of our patients.
COVID toes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Everything just sounds more and more awful by the day.
I know.
Yeah.
Right? But
I can't breathe. Also, my toes are red. And, by the way, I feel like I'm going to throw up all the time.
There
great.
You go.
Cool.
That's it. That's great. What we're dealing
Thank
with.
Thank God we have both of you out there.
Yes. Stay at home, everybody, please.
That's the reason, right? Exactly right.
Yeah.
In our final minutes here with you two medical professionals, can you give us some advice on, again, what we should be doing? Again, social distancing, physical distancing, staying at home, covering our coughs, not touching our face, washing our hands. I mean, is there any other advice you have for our audience today?
I mean, you touched on a lot of those, but I think that we really need to listen to the governor and the mandates to stay at home, only go out for essential needs, keep at least 6 feet away from each other whenever we're in lines or at the stores. Wearing cloth masks is a big thing, and I notice, you know, a lot of people still are not wearing cloth masks when they're out. It is becoming more evident that people are starting to do this, but that is an important thing to prevent this, try to help slow the asymptomatic spread. And then not really gathering in stores, or unfortunately, I know Mother's Day is coming up, but I don't think anyone wants to be giving COVID to their mom for Mother's Day. So, you know, just trying to do that social distancing, which is going to really impact and help us medical professionals, so we are not overwhelmed at the hospital with super sick people. Because, I mean, unfortunately, COVID-19, it is causing deaths throughout our community, and we need to take it seriously and help to save lives by stopping the spread and following all the recommendations that have come out.
Very true.
Yeah. I mean, I know this social distancing is really hard, and it seems like we've been doing it forever at this point, but really in Farmington especially, the cases are still going up. Which means that we're still getting community transmission. And so now is more important than ever to kind of heed these guidelines and stay at home.
Very good point. Well, we appreciate both of you taking some time to talk with us today about the developments and what you are doing, both of you, in our community for, again, patients with COVID-19 and the survivors. And, again, we wish you all both well, and thank you for the work that you are doing.
Yeah, and thank you for having us on. I have to give out a number, sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
So the COVID to home clinic number is 609-6284. And that's the number.
Okay.
Great, thank you.
Very good.
Thanks.
Well, thank you both again.
Thanks so much.
Very much, and stay well, both of you.
All right,
you too.
Thank you very much. That is Kristen Janney and Rebecca French, both certified nurse practitioners from San Juan Health Partners Family Medicine.
Yeah.
With us today.
Yeah. And I think, so I've been really fascinated by how quickly academia is moving these days.
Okay.
So because they got this model from Vanderbilt University,
right.
They said in the beginning of the interview, and I'm like, wow, academia is moving very quickly. The pharmaceutical business is moving very quickly. The government's moving very quickly. Like, can we just keep that type of model going? Like, can we speed up in general? Like, once this thing is lessened, maybe the fire underneath our feet will continue. That would be amazing. I don't know if it's just we're ripping down all the red tape now, but anyway, so shout out to all of the researchers in academia for passing all of these studies down to us, right?
Yes, I agree.
Yes,
and they're moving quickly. We're seeing a lot of things moving with trying to get the vaccine and treatments. And
Pfizer testing the human trials.
Yeah, there you go. So, so we got a question that was submitted to the show. On video, which was awesome, right?
I mean,
we haven't even asked people to do
it's
that.
It's so ingenious.
But this may start a trend, everybody. So if you would like to ask a question of some of our guests or Megan or myself. This is from Michael, who is a student at McKinley Elementary School in Farmington, and he wrote in with a question. So I'm going to see if the miracle of technology,
I can
play it here for the audience, right? So let's see what we got here. Michael, here he is. He's standing by.
Hi, I'm Michael from Farmington, New Mexico, and I was wondering if the coronavirus can stand the Sahara Desert or the Arctic.
All right, there you go.
Great.
Interesting.
So
we asked Dr. Megan to research this.
We're not claiming that I have expert medical knowledge, but I definitely researched. Yeah,
okay.
I took this question yesterday, and I spent last night, a good amount of time last night, thoroughly researching this question to make sure I had actual good sources of people that research these things.
How does the coronavirus deal with extreme temperatures?
Right. So the answer about the Sahara is a definite yes. The coronavirus is already ravaging the Sahara. There's a refugee camp that has a hashtag stay in your tent thing going on. We've been doing hashtag stay at home. They have hashtag stay in their tent. So the virus is already running free.
There's half of your answer,
in
Michael.
In the Sahara Desert.
All right.
The Arctic is a bit more complex. So Antarctica is the only continent that does not currently have the virus. Now, there are only about 6,000 people living in Antarctica, and they live in highly secluded and protected science labs, right?
Right.
The people that live in Antarctica are scientists working for their various countries in that area. So
6,000 seems like a lot. That number surprised me that there's that many.
Well,
but okay.
Many nations have their own station.
No,
right?
That makes sense now that I think about it.
Yeah, and it's obviously a gigantic landmass. So COVID-19 is not there. It's the only place on Earth where it's not.
Right.
And their biggest concern is less about the virus because there's not people trafficking in and out.
Right.
But they don't have an answer on whether or not that means the virus can't live in those extreme temperatures. But if it were, of course, if there were to be an outbreak, it would be disastrous because you're stuck in a closed space and you can't just open a window.
Right.
You can't take a walk. You can't distance.
Right.
But
your medical care is somewhat limited.
Somewhat.
There.
I mean, they have all the supplies, of course.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure they have supplies for everything under the roof. But the closest hospital for folks researching up there is in Chile.
Yeah.
And you can't fly anywhere in the winter. So come winter, you are trapped indefinitely.
And guess what? It's winter in South America.
In the
Southern Hemisphere.
Right, exactly.
Now, it's becoming winter.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
But anyway, interesting.
So
okay.
That's interesting.
Now,
I think their biggest concern, though, is the supply chain.
Sure.
So if the supply chain gets too disrupted, then what are they going to do?
Yeah, there's no Antarctic Walmart.
For example.
Or Target. Or
Your favorite store.
Or your favorite store.
That's right.
So, that would be a problem.
Huge problem.
Now, what about if you took Michael's question and just thought about the climate, right? Does it survive in severe cold or hot temperatures?
Well, we know that it's active in severely hot temperatures.
It is.
So,
but is it as active, I think, was the question.
I think that's the question we keep asking the doctors. It seems like this virus does not change based on heat and humidity. It's equally as virulent because South America and all these places are...
Yeah. So there's another part of that question, Michael, that we will maybe check. We'll send Megan back to the library.
Yeah.
That's closed.
I'm going to get back onto the LexisNexis.
WebMD. Oh, okay. There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
But check it out. But thank you,
Michael, for sending
in that question. It's awesome.
If you
would like to send us a question, we will try to answer it.
Yeah. I love me some research homework.
Yeah. Because that was kind of cool.
It was so cool. It was such
that.
A brilliant. I mean, what a kid. What a smart kid.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So. I don't know if he did that on his own or if that was an assignment from maybe mom or a teacher, but we'll take it.
But thanks for sending it. I mean, how cool.
I know.
A video question.
I love it.
I know.
I like it.
Okay. I feel more and more legit by the day.
There you go. Okay.
You've always been legit.
Oh, really?
I'm burgeoning into legitimacy.
Oh, that's nice of you to say.
No, you've...
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That must
Come
be
on.
The...
Long career for you.
Okay. Yes, I've been doing this a long time.
You can tell by the hair.
You can tell by the hair. It's gotten grayer since we started the show.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. I would like to share some other numbers with everybody.
Yes, yep.
And so that's going to require me to look over here.
Cool. Well,
can you give us an update on Korean baseball?
Well, No updates on Korean baseball, but I do have other updates. My personal algorithm strikes again. Got sent a report this morning, a brief report on public radio that was about training dogs. Okay, back to the academia, moving quickly. University of Pennsylvania has started a research project to see if they can train canines to sniff out COVID-19. Dogs are already used to sniff out other diseases like diabetes. Apparently, these diseases actually have a stench. Our noses are not sensitive enough to catch it. So that's fascinating. And it goes to the point I'm always making about how, like, I never want to own a dog, but we don't, like, humanity doesn't deserve dogs. Like, I just love what they do for us. But I can't have one in my own home.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. The dogs are cool.
Dogs are cool.
And they're helping.
And obviously, with this, right? They can. That's yeah, cool. I mean.
All right. So let's go to the numbers as we go to, again, KSJE.com. We are, again, compiling all the local COVID-19 information for the local area. And here's the latest numbers from the state. So as of yesterday, another 107 new cases. We're above 4,000 now across New Mexico. San Juan County had 25 additional cases yesterday. And so number of 6 new deaths. Now we're above 800 in San Juan County, and we had 3 additional deaths in the county. So there's that. From the numbers that are going on. And I wanted to scroll there. That's what I wanted to do, to show you the other stories that we're talking about. The Navajo Nation finally released their numbers, so we were able to update that. Again, another 101 cases. No new deaths on the reservation as of yesterday. And so they were at about 2,474 cases on the Navajo Nation. So there's that. So
yeah,
something to consider. And as we talk again to these professionals about the numbers and what they need to look like and what they need to be doing for us to maybe get out of some of these more lockdown situations and allow more businesses to reopen, these are some of the numbers that we are watching, because they go into some of these other calculations.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes. Lots of calculations happening out there.
Lots of them. And then I did want to share again from our friends over at San Juan County.
Great.
They are updating their numbers from the county every Wednesday. And so this is why we don't show this to you every day, but we do it on Thursdays. And so this, I think, is interesting, because this is cases per 7 days of new COVID-19 cases and COVID-19 deaths. So the blue line is the number of cases, which, as you can see, has dropped.
It peaked. Right.
Right? It's dropping. Now, whether it stays dropping will be interesting to see over the next week.
I think so.
Right? Because it's been going up and up and up and up, and now it's
so it looks like it peaked down, like at the end of April, at least on this graph. I'm not saying the disease itself has peaked, but on this graph.
Right.
Again, narrating for the listeners.
That's right, for our radio audience. But again, this is from San Juan County's website, sjcounty.net. If you want to go check it out, they have all this stuff compiled, and they are, again, updating these every week. And so that's why every Wednesday. So that's why we feel it's important to share this on our show.
Yes.
On Thursdays.
For sure.
Let folks know what we're looking at. So let's see if I look around over here and see where we are. Here we are. Again, these are San Juan County, state of New Mexico, and for the Navajo Nation. This is COVID total cases. Again, going into early May. And we can see that numbers and the deaths. Blue is the cases. And the Navajo Nation cases in San Juan County, it's the green line. The non-Navajo Nation cases is the blue line.
Huh.
So again, dropping down.
Right.
Navajo Nation cases are on an upswing a little bit.
Right.
According to this. And as we keep looking.
So, okay.
And then 7 days of numbers.
I think I have a
Have I confused you with this?
No.
Numbers?
Okay. But I think I have... Right. Maybe I know what's going on here.
Because,
okay, so the spike is, again, the end of April. And that's when we had that major testing event.
Right. Possibly.
Right. So maybe that really is a result of increased
more
testing.
Tests. Well, that would...
It would make sense. But yeah. I was like, why is it so high that day? But no.
Right.
Because that was the same weekend.
You can kind of see it.
Anyway.
Exactly. And then these are Navajo Nation cases in San Juan County again, and non-Navajo Nation cases in San Juan County again, compiled by the county. So we share those again.
Yeah, thanks, county.
Share out information and appreciate that. And the county was just doing that again, sjcounty.net, to find out more information. We can put that link on the show once we're off the air.
Yes.
So there you go.
Right.
So
as to not try to do it now.
No.
While we're on the air.
No, we don't want to do that. That wouldn't be good. So let's open the phone lines. If listeners do want to call, they don't have to make a video to ask us a question like Michael did. They can just call in.
Good job, Michael.
566-3909 is the phone number. We'd love to hear from you and give us some advice on how you are dealing with the pandemic. And if you're working, if you're not working, if you're working from home, how things are going.
Things you've learned about video conferencing etiquette.
Right.
That's a thing.
That is a thing.
It's a big thing.
Learning a lot about that. I have actually two of those today. So.
Yeah. Well, here's what I've learned about it. So for meetings, you can run a very, very efficient video conference meeting. And that of course, is why the technology was created. So, you know, you can mute everybody at the start and whoever's moderating can unmute in that way. What it does not work as well for is a social gathering.
No.
So.
True.
But I think they've developed all these smartphone apps for social gatherings now.
True. I think we're seeing a little bit of that from Facebook and Microsoft.
What is it? The necessity is the mother of invention?
That too.
Hey, that's phone. True.
Oh, hey. Someone's listening. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That was a little Pavlovian for a minute there. No bells, but a light. Hello, you're on KSJE. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Scott. This is Les Leach.
Les Leach, friend of the show. Good to hear from you.
Yeah.
Well, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well, considering, you know.
Right, right. I know you. I was going to say, I know you enjoyed our segment yesterday with the music teacher because you are yourself a retired music teacher, music educator.
Right, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was so cool. Amber is such a neat gal. She, back several years ago, we went to a conference together with, there were five of the elementary music teachers and I. It was really, really cool.
Nice.
The reason I was calling today, just another musical reminder, is on Fridays, all of the band directors have worked together to send pieces of music to their students and have encouraged all of the students at 10 o'clock on Friday to go out on their patio or on their front porch and play a song and to kind of listen around the neighborhood to see if they can hear others that are also kind of playing at the same time.
How cool.
This Friday they're going to be playing Ode to Joy.
Okay.
From, you know, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Yeah.
Also a familiar church hymn.
Right.
So then on Sunday, for Mother's Day, we'll be playing Simple Gifts, which
one of my faves,
Aaron Copland.
Yep.
There you go. See, Megan's on board.
Copland.
Yep.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, I knew they were doing this the first week, but I didn't know they were continuing this every Friday. So that's good to know. And again on Sunday, apparently. So.
Right.
Perfect.
And so on Sunday, just for Mother's Day, a special thing, treat or reach out to mothers and thank them. And then on the 17th, we'll be doing America the Beautiful.
Oh, nice. Very good.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
As a percussionist, I can't play my drums out. Well, I could. but
right.
I don't think it would be very very good. So my sister gave me her trumpet that she played many years, and I studied trumpet as a secondary instrument.
Wonderful.
And so I've practiced it, so I'll be sitting out on my front porch playing. So I live near where Megan lives, so she can listen. Well, she probably won't be home by then at 10 o'clock on Fridays. But
well, we'll make sure she is. How's that? Great, Les. Well, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. You stay well.
It's wonderful how music has really, really touched the hearts and souls of people through this this pandemic. It's been interesting to see how many different ways music has been used to do that.
Well, it's been
thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you very much, Les Leach. We appreciate it. Call back anytime, but we'll talk to you maybe again on the next show. So thank you very much. So there you go.
Yeah, see? He's right about that music point.
He is. You know, and I heard a story, I think it was maybe a BBC story, about how for musicians with this stay-at-home orders, they're having a harder time practicing because, you know.
They can't gather.
They can't gather.
And I tried to jam session over video calls, and there's some serious lag.
Yeah, and maybe the neighbors aren't always so understanding. that, you know, you have to practice.
I believe as well. So, and of course, they've taken a huge pay cut because they can't perform live.
They're not
live.
Performing. That's true. So a lot of them maybe are going outside, maybe with outdoor practice sessions, in the garage, in the basement, you know, those types of things, so they can keep practicing to keep their skills, of course, because you got to do that.
You got to hone the skills.
If you're a musician,
that's
for
right.
sure. So,
that's right. There's anyway. A slide.
Yeah. Don't want that.
Mm-mm.
Nope. So there you go. Perfect.
Cool. Speaking of music, you know where you can catch great music.
Oh, is this a plug for your show?
Uh-huh.
Slick. Smooth.
Well,
smooth. You got it right in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I would say maybe, let me think. Saturdays at 9?
Uh-huh. Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m.
What's the theme this week?
Well, we've been doing quarantine theme, right?
Yes.
Because there's so many songs that
relate.
Pertain to it, and there's artists who are...
I didn't know there were so many songs that pertain to it until you started picking them out and explaining.
We've done 7 weeks of it.
You have.
And so that's a lot
for
a two-hour show. And yes, and I explained the connection to the theme, and artists are actually writing their own songs as it pertains to quarantine. This week, we might do quarantine house concerts. So the theme... It might just be every song is an artist playing live from their house.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, lots of interesting cuts.
Yeah, I would think so.
Rare cuts.
Yeah. Deep.
Deep cuts.
Deep cuts. That's true.
So, listen.
Okay. Saturdays at 9 to 11
mm-hmm.
is Megan's show. Radio free Saturday morning right here on KSJE.
That's right. Freeform radio at its finest.
There's a plug. Okay, very good. Well, I think we're going to wrap up the show and wrap up the week this week.
Yep.
We appreciate everybody joining us on this local information program. Again, we're on Monday through Thursday at 9, live on Facebook and YouTube. Again, the show is rebroadcast at noon, Monday through Thursday, on KNMI 88.9 Vertical Radio. And again, at 5:06 p.m. on KSJE Radio, 90.9 FM and 103.3 FM. So you can catch it any of those times. So for now, we'll say goodbye and have a safe week, everyone, and a safe Thursday. We will
see you next week.
Next week, everyone. This is KSJE, Farmington, New Mexico. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.